The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, die good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around the pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And now it's blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you good afternoon, you are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News right here on the Black Talk Radio Network. My name is Scotty Reed. I am broadcasting from behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's date is February the 23rd, 2016. Wow, my mom's birthday is coming up. Trying to keep reminding myself of that. Probably will be cooking her a birthday dinner or whatnot. So early birthday shout outs to my mom's Mrs. Reed. All right. Hope that my voice finds you safe and sound behind these enemy lines, cause as I always state, it is a battlefield out there and casualties are being created every day. During today's program, just want to share some of the news items that have caught my eye. But of course, if you have any news that you would like to report, anything you would like to share, you can give us a call. And there are two numbers that you can call to get in on the live broadcast, and that is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Hit *6 and 1. That will signal me that you would like to come on air and share your comments with the listeners. You can also use that web-based flash phone to make a free call as long as you have a pair of headsets. The studio line is 704-951-5030. That is 904-951-5030. Now, before I get into some of the news I would like to share with you today, most of the reports, well, I should say all of the reports for our January statistical reports concerning the social media, concerning this digital radio station, as well as the different websites that we manage and publish to. So all those reports are done. The only thing that I need to wrap up is get some of the new donors to the Black Talk Media Project and get them added to our donors list so that they can get an email so they can get a look at the detailed reports. So those detailed reports will be going out tonight to our donors as well as our media partners. And again, we're entering into our 8th year of broadcasting through the Black Talk Radio Network. Of course, you know, it was set up by the Black Talk Media Project in 2008. So we're entering our 8th year. It's 2016. November will mark our actual 8-year anniversary. And I just want to express how thankful I am to all the people throughout those years who have supported the network, either through financial donations to our nonprofit or becoming media partners and working with us to disseminate information to the general public. So I just want to express thanks for that. One thing that stood out to me from these reports that I'll share with you on air today is we saw a 51.61% increase in our total number of unique listeners in the month of January as compared to the previous month of December 2015. And all the different programs saw similar increases in their listening audiences. So that was across the board, at least a 50% increase. So in the month of January, I mean, we really shot up to about 200, not about, but this is the approximate figure, 232,766 individual unique listeners tuned in to programming on Black Talk Radio Network's digital radio station in the month of January. So again, that's a 51%, almost 52% increase over the totals of listeners who tuned in December. And so our upward trends in terms of listeners and the amount of time that they're listening is growing and it's trending upward. So, you know, that's some good news. That's some good news that I want to report. And again, without the various people who have supported us throughout the years, you know, Black Talk Radio Network would cease to exist. So I just want to, you know, just again express my thanks to all of those who believe in our mission to elevate Black voices, to produce Black media that matters. And we do indeed have a global listening audience. So I'm just really excited about that growth. But of course, as we grow, as more people tune in, as more people visit the various websites that we manage, our costs do go up. You know, your donations are needed. They are really, really needed. And no amount is too small. No amount is too large. For those that don't know, although we are a nonprofit, we do not apply for grants. We're not a 501c3. We're a registered state nonprofit. We're not a 501c3, and that was done on purpose because I have no intentions of filing for any kind of grants from the United States government, any kind of grants from some of these different organizations like the Open Society Foundation. I don't plan to apply for any of those things. Now, I'm not saying that we won't apply for grants and whatnot to help with media production and various projects, because you do have organizations out there who do raise money and who do give grants for specific media projects. But, you know, we don't have anything other than what we got going on right now. But again, my point is to make to you is that this is listener funded radio, and if you have not donated and you're listening to our radio station on a regular platform, if you find any value in what we do and the information that we disseminate over this station, please become a contributor. I mean, if you could just give $1 per month, you know, that's $12 a year. That's better than nothing. All right, and that $12 a year will be put to good use. And so, you know, considering we had over 200,000, almost 250,000 people tune in, just think of every person just gave a dollar that tunes into this station. Just gave a dollar. Can you imagine how far along we could get in our vision to go into various communities and erect, you know, radio stations that are specific to those cities, to those towns, to those communities? Man, we will be so far along in that mission. So, you know, if you got a dollar to give, please throw it into the pot. We got PayPal links set up for you on our website, blacktalkradionetwork.com, blacktalkmediaproject.org. And also there is a physical mailing address for the Black Talk Media Project, which is also posted on our website, Black Talk Radio Network and blacktalkmediaproject.org. So I just wanted to share that information with you. I was like, man, I had to like check it several times and make sure that my math was correct, you know. And so, yeah, we did see 232,000 people, almost 233,000 people tune in to the digital radio station, Black Talk Radio Network. So glad to see it. Glad to see. Now, today I want to talk about a couple of stories with you. As you can see from the title of today's program, I want to briefly discuss the Grim Sleeper trial that has started out in Los Angeles. That label, the Grim Sleeper, was given to this man by the name, and let me pull up this man's name. It is the nickname that was given to the suspected serial killer in Los Angeles. I believe his name is Lonnie. Let me find that information for you right quick. I don't want to give up. Lonnie David Franklin Jr. He's 57 years old. I think he might be 60 by now, but yeah. He is the number one suspect. He is, in fact, on trial, said to be linked through DNA evidence to at least 9 or 10 murders. I've heard reports that he may be responsible for up to 100 murders, but they don't have the evidence to charge him with those crimes. And so, you know, this is a black man who preyed upon black women and murdered them, took advantage of their drug addiction, took advantage of the poverty that they lived in. And he preyed upon these women, and sexually, and, you know, at some point he got a taste for murder, it appears, and he started killing them. Because, you know, this is just really a sick crime that I suspect that sex had nothing really to do with it, because, you know, during the height of the crack cocaine crisis that was going on in the black community back in the 1980s and whatnot is when these murders started to occur. You know, wow. A lot of stuff was going on in the community, and we unfortunately had a lot of women who were willing to trade sex for money or for drugs. And so, you know, to me, these women would have had sex with you. So why did you have to kill them? Is what I'm trying to understand. And again, you know, all people are supposed to be innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. But just looking at the evidence thus far that has been presented, I think that this man committed these murders, these heinous crimes against the community, and specifically against black women. And so this is a story. The trial has been delayed several years. I know I was reading an article this morning about family members expressing frustration with how long it has taken for this man to be put on trial. I think it's going on 3 years now since they first arrested him. And now his trial, it just started this month, and they have been expressing, you know, and I read also they got laws in California that are supposed to guarantee a speedy trial, and saying not just the accused has a right to a speedy trial, but the victims and the victim families have a right to a speedy trial. But some of the reasons given why it's taking so long, or you know, why this process is being drawn out, is that it is a complicated case with so many different victims, as well as, you know, this is possibly a death penalty case, and they want to make sure that they dot the I's and cross the T's and not give this man any kind of loopholes to win an appeal and get back out on the streets. So I'm going to just let you listen to some audio clips. Again, this goes all the way back, I believe, to the 1987, I believe. And that was the year as a young 20-year-old that I joined the military. So, yeah, I remember the crack cocaine epidemic. I, you know, remember just how bad things were in certain parts of the nation and, you know, the parts that I lived in and, you know, seeing just all these women, man, just degrading themselves, and not just women, but men as well. I've even had family members of my own struggle with crack cocaine addiction, and it's not a pretty sight. It just really isn't a pretty sight whatsoever. So I'm going to go ahead and let you listen to some of the reports that have been coming out as it pertains to this man, the Grim Sleeper. Here is a report that came out in 2014, and I believe this was on HLN. I think that's the station that Nancy Grace is on, so I'm going to go ahead and give that a listen. Y'all, all right, here we go.
Known as the Grim Sleeper, terrorizing southern Los Angeles for years, at least 16 female victims are shot, strangled, sexually assaulted, then dumped on the streets like trash. Tonight, we go inside the Grim Sleeper murder investigation.
He preyed at night, trolling the streets of South Central L.A. for victims.
8 murders and an attack on a potential 9th victim who got away.
This bullet ripped right through me. I came to and he's helping himself to my body like he had a right.
Over the next 2 decades, he would take many more lives.
Then a major break. They picked up a piece of uneaten pizza crust along with some eating utensils. They had a match between Franklin and the DNA found on victims.
They can finally put a name to the Grim Sleeper, Lonnie David Franklin Jr.
And with us tonight is the Southern California Los Angeles reporter that broke this case open. She is the subject of a Lifetime movie, Grim Sleeper, that is premiering this weekend on Lifetime. Christine Pelisek, thank you so much for joining us. I have heard of you, and I would just want to know, take us from the beginning. How did you learn about all these women that were being murdered? And really, it seemed like on the outside, nothing was being done.
Well, I actually found out about it in 2006 when I got a list of from the coroner's office. He actually had a list of women body dumps from 2002 and 2006. And I ended up looking at the list and going through the list and finding out that 2 of the cases, a 2002 case and a 2003 case, were linked to a series of shooting murders back in the 80s. And that's how I originally found out about it.
And, you know, Christine, I'm from Southern California. I was in law school during that time. We didn't hear about it on the news. We didn't hear anything about it. But now you broke it open, and there is a Lifetime movie that you are the subject of in that. We want to show everybody a little bit of you being portrayed.
I love the juicy color. I'm coming back to get my toes done the same color.
Hi, Martin. We'll see you again.
All right.
Monday. Excuse me. Margette Lincoln, your son told me I could find you here.
My son? You been to my house?
Yes, well, I couldn't find a phone number. So, I work for the LA Weekly. I'm doing research for crimes that happened in the 80s, and I came across a story of how you were attacked.
I don't know who you think you are, but you need to get up out of my business, okay?
Margette, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
I will kick your ass into next Tuesday, okay?
I don't think it's me you want to take down. I think it's the man who assaulted you.
Assault? You make it sound so polite. He tried to kill me cold.
Well, can you tell me anything about him?
I don't give a man 2 thoughts. But if the Lord God is good, and I know he is, then the bastard is burning in hell right now.
I don't think he is in hell. I think that he's still out there, and he's still attacking and killing other women.
And that is from Lifetime's original movie, The Grim Sleeper. I want to ask you, how did the case get broken open to then arrest the man we're looking at right there, Lonnie Franklin, who is now charged now for 10 murders, but it's believed that he has committed many, many more?
Well, his DNA was not in any CODIS database, so one of the problems with trying to find him was that he left his semen and saliva behind on his victims, but he wasn't in any CODIS database. So what they tried to do in 2008, they tried to do a familial DNA search looking for a relative, a male relative of the killer. And so they attempted to do it in 2008 and it didn't work. And they tried it again in 2010 and it hit on a 28-year-old who was living in South Los Angeles, but they knew he was related to the killer, but he wasn't the killer because he would have been too young. And so they actually looked at, there was two people they followed. They followed his uncle who lived out in Rancho Cucamonga about 90 miles away and his father, Lonnie Franklin Jr., who lived smack dab in the epicenter of where all the murders happened.
And the Grim Sleeper has not yet gone to trial. That is set at this point for July of this year. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Watch that Lifetime movie, and you can watch the original movie, The Grim Sleeper, this Saturday, March 15th at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific.
All right, so that was a report from HLN. You had Christine Pulesk, who was sitting in for Nancy Grace, I guess. So that was from 2014. Again, his trial just started this week. Now, here is some things. Now, she's being credited, the reporter, I guess, of breaking the story open. And I guess they're talking about from a media standpoint. It has long been stated in the black community and throughout this nation that whenever black people are the victims of crimes, particularly black women, that, you know, that the media, law enforcement, just people in general just don't seem to care about those black lives and whatnot, and the resources are never put there in order to solve these murders and whatnot or address these issues. But there was a group of community members in the epicenter or where these murders were going down in South Los Angeles, California, and the name of the coalition that they started to address these murders, these serial killings, was the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders. Again, that is the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders. And it is because of them, from what I have read, the research that I was doing this morning, from what I have read, they should be credited with pressuring the police into actually setting up a task force and to acknowledge all of those killings as the work of a serial killer. They even launched a media campaign and also set up a fund, a monitor to give out, an award for information that would lead to the capture of the killer. And it was only after they did what they did as advocates of the community, taking the initiative to launch a media awareness campaign to warn people about this and also bring to their attention that the police and law enforcement was doing very little to solve these murders and also coming up with money to, solicit information that would lead to the capture of this killer. So, I don't know. I never saw that movie that they were just talking about. And I wonder if this Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders got any kind of recognition or the credit that they should get in forcing law enforcement to do its job. Now, this is something else I discovered today that was particularly troubling, is that while this particular man was out committing these murders, these serial killings that you had about, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4 other serial killers in that same area murdering people. So I'm like, wow, you know, that community has experienced so much tragedy during that time period. So, yeah. So this trial is underway. Right now, I'm not sure what stage it is in. Well, yes, I do. I do remember that the prosecution gave their opening statements, and as well as the defense waived this right to make opening statements, but they can, you know, once the prosecution gets done presenting its case, then the defense can, you know, offer a opening statement and a rebuttal to the evidence. From also what I've been reading, they have been showing photographs of the crime scenes of these women's bodies, as they were found. Some of them, you know, tossed in the garbage cans, some just thrown in the alley with garbage thrown in on top of them. And so they've been showing pictures, of these women who are said to be victims of this man. So I do want to read to you the victims and their ages at their time of death. Victim, we have a 29-year-old black female by the name of Deborah Jackson, and her body was found on August the 10th in 1985 in Vermont Slauson, Los Angeles. Henrietta Wright was a black female, 34 years of age. Her body was found August the 12th, 1986 in Hyde Park, Los Angeles. Now, there is, although he's not charged with this, they are connecting the death of a black male by the name of Thomas Steele, who was 36 years old when his body was found on August the 14th, 1986 in Harvard Park, Los Angeles. They were saying that possibly he was killed because he saw or he knew that Mr. Franklin was behind those murders, and that's possibly why he was killed. I haven't seen any evidence to support that, but he is listed among the victims of this man. Barbara Ware, she was just 23 years old, a black female killed. Her body was found on January the 10th, 1987 in Central Alameda, Los Angeles. Bernita Sparks, 26 years old, black female, body found April 15, 1987 in Gramercy Park, Los Angeles. Mary Lowe, black female, 26 years old, body found November the 1st, 1987 in Gramercy, also in Gramercy Park, Los Angeles. You had I can't pronounce this, LaSharika Jefferson, a 22-year-old black female, body found January the 30th, 1988 in Westmont, Los Angeles County. You have Alice Monique Alexander, a black female, only 18 years old, body found September 11th, 1988 in Vermont Square, Los Angeles. We have Anitra Margaret Washington. She is the survivor that you just heard, I guess, being portrayed by an actress in that film that you heard on that clip. She is the only known survivor, and she was attacked in Gramercy Park, Los Angeles as well. Princess Bertholmew, only 15 years old, black female, body found March 19, 2002 in Inglewood, California. Two more victims that he is charged with are Valerie McCorvey, was 35 years old, black female, body found July 11, 2003, Westmont, Los Angeles County. And the last victim for which he is charged in her murder was Janicia Peters. She was only 25 years old, black female, body found January 1st, 2007 in Gramercy Park, Los Angeles. Let's see. So they really didn't even arrest this guy until July 7th, 2010. He was arrested in Los Angeles County, and he was charged with 10 counts of murder and one count of attempted murder. and special circumstances allegations of multiple murders in the case. I guess, you know, that's an enhanced charge for serial killing. He has been in jail since his arrest in 2010, and so he's been locked up for, like, what, 6 years? The large volume of evidence is, they say, dates back 30 years, and this is the reason that the trial is taking so long. And it has been delayed, in fact, several times before opening on February the 16th, just a couple of weeks ago. In Los Angeles. So I'm not seeing a whole lot of media reports in terms of this trial. You contrast this with Daniel Holzclaw, who fortunately did not kill all the black women that he was raping and sexually assaulting in Oklahoma City. And perhaps because he was a cop is the reason that case got so much widespread attention. But I'm really not seeing a whole lot of news coming out over the wire in terms of, you know, Lonnie David Franklin Jr.'s trial for murdering all of those black women. And again, some of the people say that he may have killed more than that. But, you know, they only got DNA evidence on those for which he has been charged. All right, so I hope that the family members will get justice. Again, just want to acknowledge that this man probably would not have been caught if members of the community did not step up and force law enforcement to do its job. Because, you know, we always hear, even though it's BS, but we always hear in this political climate where we hear young college students and others saying that Black Lives Matter, and that is just an affirmation of saying that our lives do in fact matter, although the system does devalue our lives unless they can make money off our black bodies, then we matter. But in terms of, you know, just everyday people, our lives do not seem to matter. And so, you know, we've been hearing that criticism towards Black Lives Matter. If Black Lives really matter, you will be addressing crime in the black community. Well, people have been addressing crime in the black community for a very, 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 very long time. And that's just an illegitimate attack to take the focus off of police committing serial killings, because some of these policemen, they are in fact serial killers. But it is good to see that in this case, you know, going all the way back to when these murders were occurring, that members of the community were stepping up to say that these black women's lives matter. So again, shout out to them. And a shout out to everybody that's out there trying to make Black Lives Matter, no matter who the perpetrator is, no matter who these killers are, no matter who these enslavers are, these abusers, these human traffickers. Yes, black lives do matter to us, and we will continue to work to make the system recognize that we do in fact have human rights and that we will not accept this mistreatment. All right, go and take a station identification break, and when I come back, I want to jump on a couple of other news stories before we conclude today's broadcast. Coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time tonight will be a Tando radio show. I'm not sure about, I believe the Why You Mad Son radio, they're taking February off, the month of February. But they have been pushing out some podcasts that they have done over the year, you know, circulating it as, in fact, black history. And so you should be able to see some of those podcasts shared on their Facebook page, Why You Mad Son Radio. You can find the widget for their Facebook page on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, along with widgets to some of our other media partners. And Unless I'm mistaken, yeah, that's all we have for live programming tonight. But as always, you know, there is always something on our digital radio station on air 24/7, whether it's lectures, whether it's past podcasts, whether it's news reports or whatnot. There is something always being aired on Black Talk Radio Network's digital radio station. All right, we're going to take a break. When I come back, got just a couple of more news items that I would like to share. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, and I am indeed broadcasting from behind enemy lines. We'll be right back.
What is racial showcasing? That means taking huge numbers of black people and putting them out front. There's going to be more of this all over the planet. Many, many millions of black people that you will see who will be rolling in money. They'll be able to showcase the places where they live. They'll be able to showcase their knowledge and expertise. So you have television now, you have all of the mediums for doing this, for showcasing huge numbers of black people. I will say it will eventually run into the millions, so many that you won't be able to count them. Now, what is this for? This is for any black person that starts talking about racism in the future is going to be laughed at, because they're going to be able to showcase so many black people who are what you call quote unquote successful that it will seem that racism has been put out of business. But white supremacy is a world business, and like any other business, it works on profits and losses, which means percentages. You go into business, you expect a certain amount of loss. You're in the grocery business, well, you might have a load of asparagus that is full. But overall, you will make more profits than you have losses if you're going to stay in the business. Now, so the white supremacists know that the cost of doing the business of white supremacy is going up. They can no longer get away with Joe Louis and Lena Horne like they did years ago. They have to have many, many, many more black people who are going to be showcased. I made up this term just to explain it. You have to make up terms, because they won't make them up for you. So now that's the first phase, or one of the first elements in the maximum confusion. And so that black people won't be able to say, they'll say, well, you know, it must be something wrong with me that I'm down and out and don't have a biscuit to eat, because there are so many millions of black people who have so much, so it can't be race. But see, for the 4 or 5 million black people who will be showcased, there will be hundreds of millions worldwide who won't have a biscuit. That's the way the business operates in the future, and will be. That's the way it seems to be going, according to what? The evidence, according to the logic.
Malcolm, what is your purpose here?
Well, my purpose here is to remind the African heads of state that there are 22 million of us in America who are also of African descent, and to remind them also that we are the victims of America's colonialism or American imperialism, and that our problem is not an American problem, it's a human problem. It's not a Negro problem, it's a problem of humanity. It's not a problem of civil rights, but a problem of human rights.
And what do you hope for from this conference?
Well, we hope to bring pressure upon them, or rather we hope to impress upon them the importance of their bringing pressure and world opinion upon the United States to take some meaningful efforts to solve our problem in America. We want them to help us get our problem before the United Nations and charge America with violating our human rights in the same way that South Africa is charged with violating the human rights of our people in that area.
And what sort of reaction have you been getting from the African leaders?
Well, I've gotten a good reaction, a very sympathetic reaction, and an understanding reaction. Many of them have been misinformed by the American government into thinking that black people in America don't identify with Africa, and therefore they've restrained themselves from voicing their interest in our problem. But I've impressed upon them that our problem is their problem, as well as their problems are our problem.
We'll be right back.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. In the news this morning, I think it was starting to be reported last night, but President Obama, CEO of USA Inc., is attempting to get lawmakers to allow him to shut down Guantanamo Bay. For those that remember, that was a campaign promise of Barack Obama when he was running for president to shut down the torture gulag known as Guantanamo Bay, which is on an occupied territory in Cuba. And Cuba, in fact, has been calling for the return of their land, which upon Guantanamo Bay is built. And so, you know, for those that don't recall the history, recent history, you have, at one point, you had hundreds of people who were just kidnapped from all over the world. I remember some of the cases where people were kidnapped from Europe, people were kidnapped from parts of Africa, people were kidnapped from parts of the Middle East, because the United States federal government, probably through the CIA, was doing this under the table or whatnot, out of the public eye, and they were offering bounties on quote-unquote terrorists, people connected to Al-Qaeda and whatnot. And so you had people who were just snitching on people who had nothing to do with any, had no affiliations to any of those organizations. And these men, and it has all been men, I haven't heard about any women down there, were kidnapped off the street, often transferred to secret sites all over the world, run by the United States government. They call them CIA black sites, where they were tortured. Some of the cases I can recall of a man being tied up, butt naked, you know, hanging from his wrist, exposed to extreme cold. I guess they had him in a refrigeration unit and whatnot. Then you had even female soldiers getting in on the torture, and they took a razor to his penis. And I mean, just heinous sort of crimes that which nobody has ever been charged for. And so, you know, it continues at Guantanamo Bay. Some of the abuses and what is called torture there is solitary confinement conditions. Again, this is in the international community has recognized solitary confinement as torture. And then, you know, you had men who were going on hunger strikes protesting their unlawful detention without charge. I mean, you got men that have been held down there for years since the Bush administration who have not even been charged with a crime. And then some of them have went through the little kangaroo court military tribunals and they have been cleared. But yet they still languish in Guantanamo Bay, because no country will take them. You know, no country wants to let them, you know, walk among their population and whatnot. And so the Guantanamo Bay, when President Obama talked about closing this torture gulag, the Republican Party as a whole immediately started talking about blocking it, coming up with ridiculous arguments about this is going to be putting Americans in jeopardy and all this and that. You can't bring them to maximum security prisons here in the United States or give them a trial and whatnot. And so let's just leave. I think you had Ted Cruz the other day talking about he would leave Guantanamo Bay open indefinitely. All right. And so, you know, they passed legislation. Don't ask me why President Obama signed it. I'm sure that it was attached to probably some spending bill or something that had to be passed. And so I guess he didn't want to veto it and veto the entire bill, even though he may have had problems with keeping Guantanamo Bay open. But what they passed was a bill to prevent any funds to be used to transfer these prisoners to the United States. All right. But they ain't got a problem with spending up to $500 million a year, is the figure that I saw today, that they're spending to keep Guantanamo Bay open and to keep people that they have even said is innocent locked up down there for no other reason than racism and white supremacy. All right. So, I mean, the excuses that they give don't hold any water whatsoever. You got serial killers. We just got through talking about this serial killer. You got serial killers and people who have committed terrorist acts here in the United States who are in these prisons right now. So, you know, this whole notion that, you know, we can't bring people here and give them a trial or access to the courts or house them in U.S.-based prisons. It's just ridiculous. It is just part of the childishness of Republicans and the fact that, you know, when President Obama was elected, they said that they was going to make him a one-term president and they were going to, you know, just block everything, no matter if it was good, no matter if it was bad. They were just going to block it simply because, you know, he supported it or whatnot. Just childish, ignorant people and whatnot. And again, you know, not that I'm trying to take up for the CEO of USA Inc., because he has been a part of some war crimes and crimes against humanity in Africa and other parts of the world. But, you know, on this particular issue in closing Guantanamo Bay, I happen to share his position in that it should be shut down. Yesterday, it should have been shut down. And so when I hear these people talk about liberty and justice for all, you know, what I hear is liberty and justice for white people. Because there are no white people being housed down there in Guantanamo Bay, being tortured down there in Guantanamo Bay. Even when they had one, caught one, a white person on a battlefield, John Walker Lynn, they gave him media access to the courts. He wasn't transferred to Guantanamo Bay, and he's housed in a U.S. prison if he ain't got out by now, because he did enter into a plea deal with them. So he was a white man who converted to Islam and whatnot, and he was found on a battlefield, I believe, with the Taliban, if I'm not mistaken. Could have been some other U.S.-backed group. But, yeah, they said that he was caught on the battlefield. And, again, I immediately noticed the difference in how he was treated and how those non-white suspects were treated. And so, you know, in this instance, I think it is safe to say that this is just another case of Republicans practicing racism. These are Republicans practicing racism and whatnot. So, just wanted to share that story with you. It's unlikely that President Obama will get Guantanamo Bay closed by the time he leaves office. I believe his last day will be January the 20th of next year. 2017 will be his last day or last month in office. I don't foresee him getting this closed, not with the Congress that he has right now. All right, so, but I do think that it is important that we point out the hypocrisies of the United States government to the rest of the world and how they want to talk about liberty and justice and respecting people's human rights and whatnot. They have no respect for human rights. They don't give a damn. These are lawbreakers. You know, they break the very laws. They violate the very principles that they claim they support. You know, especially if it's pertaining to the mistreatment of non-white people. The last story that I want to share with you is about ancestry and finding out your ancestry. I have stated on past programs that, you know, before we jump up and claim that we the descendants of enslaved Africans, we ought to at least find out if that's true or not before we claim to be having flashbacks. And I'm not trying to make light of the theory that, enslaved Africans have passed on genetic memories to their offspring and whatnot. And this has been passed down. I think they call it post-traumatic slave disorder or slavery disorder or something of that You know, before you claiming all of this type of stuff, you know, you need to make sure, in fact, that you are the descendant of an enslaved African. And that's one of my pet peeves. One of the things that kind of irritates me to no end is that every black person, it seems every black person in America, wants to claim that they are the descendants of enslaved Africans. And that every, you know, and it gives the impression that every person, every black person here in the United States is here because of the transatlantic slave trade. And that's simply not the case. That is simply not true. And it ignores a huge part of black history, not only on this continent, but, you know, the links to Africa, where Africans sailing here perhaps hundreds of years before Christopher Columbus and settling on this continent and settling other parts of the world. There, I mean, you can find black people all over the world. I have found documentaries on that. In you know, whether it's in Asian countries, whether it's in Latin American countries, there's no place on the planet except for maybe if you know, Alaska and Siberia and you know, places like that where it's real cold. I don't think you'll find any, you know, indigenous black populations there in those places. But everywhere else, yeah, you will find black people. All right. And so when we say that, when we claim that we're all descendants of enslaved Africans, man, we are doing ourselves no justice, and we're are not doing our ancestors any justice, you know. And of course, I'm not trying to say that being the descendant of an enslaved African is anything to be ashamed of. No, I mean, your ancestor was a victim or whatnot. But let's just not assume these things, and let's actually do the research. Let's actually do the research on our family tree. You know, I'm starting to read, you know, these databases are coming online now that are compiled with the actual names and information as much as possible that can be known about these victims of the American slave trade, which continues to this day, regardless of what lies you've been told. But those databases are coming online. All right. And then we also have now, you know, DNA technology where we can find out where it is our particular bloodlines are from. And we don't have to be, you know, claiming to be something that we are not. All right. Again, you know, if it was not for black people, the United States would not even exist, as I've talked about in the past. If not for black people, the North, the so-called Union, would not have won the Civil War. All right. And I would submit to you all these other wars, because black people have it from the beginning of U.S. history. We have been in every area of people activity, but we don't know. We don't know, because all we've been fed for the past 50 years is that, you know, we came over here in the 1700s or the 1600s as enslaved Africans, and that was it. And that's how you got here. And that's just BS. It's just a lie. So I was reading this story over the weekend about this black woman who is actually a descendant of an enslaved African. Her name is Marie Brooks, and her mother's name is Doris Benet. I guess that's Benway or Benet, or is that Benoit Brooks? But they were able to find some records in Kentucky at the Oldham County Historical Society, and, you know, they was able to go through there and research their genealogy. And they come to find out that they are descendants of a escaped enslaved African. And so I would say that, you know, they were even, if you escape from slavery, that's an act of abolitionism. The very act of resisting slavery is an act of abolitionism. All right. For those that don't know what abolitionism is, that is when you're working to abolish slavery. And yes, we do have abolitionists alive today as I'm one of them, as a number of people on this network are, do classify themselves as new abolitionists, because we recognize the fact that slavery has never been abolished, and that slavery and human trafficking is still being practiced by not only the federal government, but state governments and corporations as well. All right. So anyway, the Brooks family, I'll just read a little bit from this article that I shared on Black Talk Radio Network. She said, they wrote in part, and this is, who is this speaking? Marie Brooks. This is her. We had heard he was a, okay, let me see, let me back up. All right, J.H. Brooks, for 39 years in business at Monrovia, died at his home there early Monday morning of kidney trouble, age 67. So they're just going, this is something that they found in the paper. All right, and let me just jump down. She said that we had heard he was a slave, but we did not know that he and his family had escaped slavery. The library directed us to resources for his mother, Eliza, and she was listed in the 1870 census, which corroborated the person we thought was his mother. She was 50 years old when she escaped slavery. I started searching for months for Eliza Brooks, but couldn't find anything. So I was at the Kentucky Historical Society at Frankfort and just started searching for first names only, Eliza and Henry, as slaves, and found them together. It gave his approximate birth date, which was July, and the right birth year, which matched my great-grandfather. And then the Boudreaux letter that we had matched with the slave records. We had this Boudreaux letter in our family all the time, but never knew what it meant. J.D. Boudreaux was the son of Dr. Jeffrey W. Boudreaux, who lived and is buried in Oldham County. She went on to say, when my great-great-grandfather escaped with my great-grandfather and his sister, there was a woman named Lucy that lived with her in Indiana. I also found there was a slave, Lucy, that lived on the farm in Kentucky. The more I learned about the institution of slavery, it makes me proud of Eliza, and I feel privileged to have this information. Eliza worked as a housekeeper in Indiana, according to the 1870 census. I also became very proud of my great-grandfather's work in Indiana that was stated in Things I Found. I also was impressed by those letters between the slave owner's son, J.D. Boudreaux, and my great-great-grandfather. All right, so again, you can read the rest of this article. As I even did my own research over the past couple of years on my family, and the reason I started doing this research is because I had a cousin come to me, a second cousin, I think he's my second cousin, Reuben, but he came to me with a map, and he asked me for help in finding records to prove that we were related to a family by the name of Rankins here in Gaston County, North Carolina. The reason that he wanted that information, I found out, was because he wanted to recover land that was stolen from our family. And so, you know, that's how I started doing the research. And then come to find out, not only are we related to the nine Rankin families of Gaston County, but we all trace our lineage back to, man, his name was just on the Samuel Rankin, who was too old to fight in the American Revolution, but he donated, you know, supplies and equipment to help in the war effort. But one of his sons actually did joined the militia and was part of the Continental Army. And so, you know, that was very eye-opening to me. I also found that we are, well, I knew this, but I didn't know, you know, the details, but also found that we are descendants of the Cherokee Nation that was here in North Carolina before the tribe was where there were many wars that were fought here. in this area of North Carolina between Indians and settlers and whatnot. And that culminated in the defeat of the Indians, and they were put on a trail of tears. And that's how a lot of Cherokees ended up in Oklahoma. But I found that my Cherokee ancestor, a woman, had married one of the Rankins, and that is how our branch of the Rankin family was able to, I guess, hold on to some of the land that we have. I mean, we still be finding Indian arrowheads and different artifacts and stuff, you know, on this land, but a lot of it, again, has been stolen, and we're trying to recover that. And so that was just very eye-opening to me. It also does give you a sense of, what's the word I'm looking for? It just gives you a connection to the past, a direct connection to the past, as opposed to just saying, you know, I'm the descendant of an enslaved African, or I'm descendant of this family here, that family. I mean, but you don't know. You know your name, but how many of us even know who our great-great-grandmothers are or our great-great-great-grandfathers are? And that's just truly sad if that information has been hidden from you, if you don't have that information. It just made me feel, I guess, more complete as a person in uncovering of this history about our family. And, you know, it just also opened up my eyes to, you know, just how differently I started looking at things in the area that I live in and whatnot. And also I discovered on doing this research that you had, and I mentioned it before, at least 400 Africans who fought in the Continental Army from North Carolina. And these were not enslaved Africans. These were free Africans. They were African settlers in the colony of North Carolina, because North Carolina was one of the 13 original colonies. So, you know, it was just, I was just happy for this woman to find out. And I could just feel the pride that she felt in finding out that one of her ancestors had actually resisted their enslavement and fled and left in an act of abolitionism. So, you know, it is important. Our family histories are important. It helps you to know who you are. It helps to also reveal many of things about you and whatnot. And here in North Carolina, you know, there was one major story that came out where they had these property records at this one county, and they set them on fire. These were historical records, and they just, you know, there was some damage to this courthouse. And when they went in there and they found all these records in the basement, I think it was like fire damage, but they found all these records in the basement, and they didn't know what to do with them. Instead of archiving them, instead of, you know, turning them over to some kind of historical society or just keeping them on file, they set them records on fire. And these were property deeds. And I suspect that those what they were doing was covering up the fact that of land that was stolen from black people. Whether it was through corporations like the Duke family, which now runs Duke Energy and whatnot, the Reynolds family, which was also into tobacco and stuff like that, also the Duke University. You know, you had a couple of prominent families and whatnot that was engaged in slavery, but they were also engaged in practicing racism and white supremacy against black people and stealing their land. That's the only thing that I can come up with as to why some idiots would burn up a bunch of property deeds and stuff that they found. So it's important, people, to do this research before they destroy your family records, which might reveal, you know, property that was illegally confiscated or stolen from your family, and you are an heir to that property. So again, it's very important for a multitude of reasons to know who your ancestors were, in my opinion. All right, so that's the end of today's program. Tomorrow is Wednesday, so y'all know on Wednesdays I do not do an episode of Black Talk Radio News, but I will be on air that night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time along with Max Parthas and Yohanan Eliah as we bring you an episode of New Abolitionist Radio, which comes on every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. All right, so Tando Radio Show will be coming up in just about 55 minutes here. I do need to finish with the donor list and add all the new donors to that list so that they can get an email with the links to our detailed reports. Again, in case you missed the opening of our broadcast, we experienced about a 50, what was it? Let me pull up that information again. Almost a 52% increase in our total unique listeners compared to the previous month of December 2015. So we had last month 232,766 unique listeners tune in to programming here on the Black Talk Radio Network. And so that is why your donations are important. So I need to get our new donors added to the list, and so I can send them an email of these various progress reports. Recognize the fact that you do, in fact, live behind enemy lines of USA Inc. Slavery was never abolished. They are practicing legalized slavery and human trafficking via the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Slavery is very profitable. It's an industry that provides perhaps hundreds of thousands of jobs to cops and prison overseers and whatnot. And it needs to be abolished. All right. And that, you know, while we do need, in fact, to continue this movement to make Black Lives Matter, there is nothing wrong with an affirmation of saying that Black Lives Matter and whatnot. But to the system, it's the way that those lives matter. And to the system, you know, you're still a slave. And if they can put you on a prison plantation, well, you might be worth anything up to about $40,000 a year, up to perhaps $200,000 or more per year. You will, a bunch of people will get jobs based off of your enslavement. So what I'm trying to say is, you need to take precautions. You need to develop battlefield awareness. You need to stop doing dumb things like smoking weed and driving down the road. You need to be wearing your seatbelt. You don't need to be drinking and driving. You don't need to be engaged in any kind of crime. Now, I understand crimes of survival or whatnot, but if you are in that position where you're trying to survive and you have to commit what I call crimes of survival, just be careful out there, man. I hate to see you made a slave, all right, a new slave for the new plantation. So you just got to be on your P's and Q's, man, and just make sure that you're doing everything possible to prevent yourself from becoming a casualty in Battlefield America. Until tomorrow night, peace and blessings to all. Be safe out there. Please be safe.
Because they never want to meet him on the battlefield.
What is your opinion?